You're listening to Trek FM.
Want to join in the conversation and share your thoughts on this episode? Join the Babel Conference, our listeners' discussion group on Facebook. Just type B-A-B-E-L into the Facebook search field, and we'll look forward to seeing you there.
This is Steve Sansweet of Rancho Obi-Wan, and you're listening to the 602 Club.
There was a little bar in Mill Valley where all the Starfleet trainees used to go.
The 602 Club.
You know it.
I was there more times than I can remember.
This is your mother's throne, Your Grace.
Have you come to save us, Clara?
No. I'm sorry. I didn't even know this place existed before today. You see, I was looking for a Christmas present from my godfather.
I love Christmas.
What's Christmas?
And then I ran into this horrible little mouse. And that's where I met the captain.
We barely escaped Mother Ginger and the Mouse King.
Oh, you met Mother Ginger? Oh, my dear Clara, you're lucky to be alive.
You must promise never to go back to the land of amusements, Clara.
Oh, Hawthorne!
Its title has been rescinded, Hawthorne.
Of course. I meant the Fourth Realm. Apologies. I'm just so upset. Forget I ever mentioned the land of amusements.
Hello and welcome to the 602 Club, Trek FM's local watering hole, coming at you from the Fourth Realm this week. I'm so excited to be here. I've got to say, it looks gorgeous here. Now that things have been fixed up, the land of amusements is really nice. So very excited to be here. And I'm joined by none other than the fantastic Christy Morris. How's it going, Christy?
Oh, thank you. I love that intro. I'd like to be the fantastic from the land of flowers, if I can.
Well, I could see you being a flower girl, you know?
Yeah.
I could totally see that happening, you know, flowers in your hair kind of thing.
I was once when I was four. Get it?
Yeah, see, there you go. There you go. You know, my sister was as well when she was very young, I think about two, and she laid down and fell asleep on the stairs at the wedding.
That's what's so cute about flower girls.
Yeah.
But anyway.
Everybody thought it was cute because she was too young. But, you know, you can't do that when you get older.
No.
You know, your friends want you to be in their wedding and everything. And just, yeah. So.
But, yeah.
Best reason to go to a wedding is when they have open bar.
Oh, yeah. So. We didn't. You would have hated our wedding.
No, we didn't either. So I'm just saying.
Oh,
you know, it's but when you got those people who can afford it, thank God for that. Anyway, welcome to the 602 Club. This is an open bar. We're glad that you're here. Christy and I are going to be diving into The Nutcracker in the Four Realms, the latest film from Walt Disney Pictures, talking about that. But before we do, just want to remind you that you can find the 602 Club wherever you get your podcasts. You know, honestly, we're all over the place, so maybe you're listening on Spreaker, maybe you're listening on Apple Podcasts or Spotify even. You can find us all over the place there. But, you know, people still tend to get most of their podcasts, and I know that you probably heard this before, but people really do. Like, most of the listening actually still comes from an Apple device. So whether it's you know, your iTunes on your computer or whether it's your Apple Podcasts, it really does help when people give us a star rating and review over there on Apple Podcasts or iTunes. So please do that. It helps people find the show. If you like the 602 Club and you're listening, just head over there. Give us a quick star rating and review, and we'll let people know what you think of the show by reading out your review on the show. You can also find us on Twitter, at TrekFM, or on Facebook at Facebook.com/TrekFM. We also have our listeners-only discussion group, so if you would like the opportunity to be able to talk to listeners from all over, you can find us over there. Take Babel into the search field on Facebook because it's called the Babel Conference. Or if you go over to the website at trek.fm, hit discussion on any of the menu bars, and that will bring you over there and you can join the group. It's a lot of fun. It's a great place to talk to people from all over the world listening to Trek FM shows. And then last but not least, like I said, you can find us on trek.fm. And if you wanted to send us an email, you can go over to, and you know, it's been a while since we've gotten some emails. So go over to Trek.fm/contact, choose a show, choose the 602 Club, and then that'll come to me and any host that's on that week, and we can talk to you about whatever it is you want to talk about. I was interested in this one, Christy, because for me, the ballet is something that's been with me pretty much my whole life, you know, the Nutcracker. And I wondered for you, was this a movie that you were excited about? Had you had experience with the ballet? Have you seen it? Did you grow up with the music? What's your connection with the Nutcracker?
So I will say I also grew up with the Nutcracker being a part of my life. I actually went with my aunt, my mom, and my little sister to see it at the Fabulous Fox Theater in Atlanta.
Oh, nice.
Which was beautiful. I mean, if you ever want that experience of sitting like in a balcony in a huge auditorium, seeing a play on the stage with the full orchestra down front, it's an incredible experience. It's expensive, but it's a once in a lifetime thing. So that was the first time I ever saw the ballet. And then we also always listened to it at Christmas time, just the music. And really listening to stuff like that with my dad got me into listening to more orchestral stuff in the first place. So I had a lot of experience with this before ever seeing this movie, but I kind of heard about the movie The Nutcracker and the Four Realms as like an afterthought. I think you were the first person to mention to me, are you going to go see that? And I was kind of hesitant because I've seen the ballet before and I knew this might have to be a little bit different and wasn't sure if I liked that. But it changed my mind. I'm not going to give too much away yet.
Yeah.
But
that's cool, though. And I, it's funny because I have very similar story. You know, for me, we saw the ballet as kids. My sister and I, my parents took us to see it. Grew up with the music, obviously. And, you know, I'm a big fan of Christmas music. As we're recording this, it is November 5th, and I've already been listening to some Christmas music.
No.
I've already listened to the Nutcracker a few
it's
times.
It's not even Thanksgiving.
Yeah, I know. I just love Christmas. And so, and I love the music for the Nutcracker. So, and then a few years back, went and saw the Nutcracker again as an adult with some friends of mine. And that was really, really fun to be able to do and experience it that way, you know, as an adult.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they would have it play on like PBS at Christmas time as well. Like, you just have a broadcast of the ballet. So I've seen it many, many times and in many different ways, you know, interpretations for the ballet. But I grew up loving it. And so for me, the fact that they were going to make a story out of the idea of the Nutcracker and turn it into a movie was really interesting to me. I definitely knew, like you, that they would change it or do something different. It wouldn't just be straight up the ballet. And so I guess that's kind of a good question to ask you. You know, overall, with the way that the movie kind of portrays the world of the Nutcracker, did you end up liking it? Did you feel like it worked and it felt like it paid a good homage to that, but also was its own thing?
I do. Overall, I definitely enjoyed it and felt like it told a compelling story. And I think that visually there was a lot that was beautiful about the way that the costuming especially was done, but, you know, the scenery as well. But I did feel like there wasn't enough ballet in it for me.
Yeah, I've heard that.
It was just a little taste. And then I felt like the only character that kind of let me down a little bit was Clara. I felt like she wasn't as developed as I would like to have seen, like a big enough turn in her character.
Yeah, I was interested because I wondered how they would do it and if they would have any ballet in it, because I didn't actually go in expecting there to be dancing or ballet.
Right, yeah, me neither.
Yeah, and so I was actually really glad that they kind of created a little ballet within this world to explain a part of the story, which was very fun. And, you know, then there was some dancing in it. But I liked the way that they kind of took the idea of the world of the Nutcracker and the different realms, you know, from the music.
Mm-hmm.
and created worlds within that, you know, the snowflakes, the flowers, the land of sweets, that kind of stuff. I thought that was really fun and very imaginative and definitely a part of everything that you expect from this kind of production. So I was pretty happy with the storyline. I think the one thing for the storyline that kind of surprised me was that in many ways, this movie is about a mother's death and coming to terms with that and the impact that it's had on this family. And I think for me, that was the thing. I went in, I didn't read any reviews. You know, I only kind of really knew that this was going to be a movie around the idea of the worlds of the Nutcracker. Mm-hmm. So I didn't really have anything expectations. And so to go in and really have this be a movie about where, especially our main character, Clara, and her family are dealing with the repercussions of their mom being dead for about a year now, I thought was really fascinating. And because you don't really get a lot of kids' movies where the main theme of the movie is dealing with death.
Right, because, I mean, you would think usually they would probably upset kids too much by doing that, so they just don't. Yeah. But I will... Oops, sorry. I will add to that, though, if you think about all of the Disney movies of the past, I mean, a lot of them lost parents, so they kind of do. It's like you don't think about that consciously when you're watching it, but then thinking back, I'm like, well... Ariel didn't have a mother in The Little Mermaid, and Bambi lost his mother, and, you know, like, it's, there's all these characters in Disney that lose parents. But I do agree with you and think that that was an interesting way to go with this, especially because the ballet had no inkling of anything like death. So that was part of their rewriting, adding some things to the story. And I think that worked because I think in general, the ballet, although it's beautiful and has this great music, could be a little fluffy, I guess I would say, and not have a ton of depth of the story. And so I feel like them having to deal with something as serious as her mother's death gives more weight to this movie and makes it more compelling for you because, you know, otherwise mm-hmm. it's just a lot of, you know, I guess similar to like The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe without the war.
Yeah, you know, it is very interesting. There are some similarities to different movies that Disney has done. You know, they were a part of The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe. And then, of course, there is a Santa Claus 2 element in here that if you're paying attention, you'll catch. But it was fascinating to me that really the main story is about how a young girl comes to grips with the loss of her mother and the way that impacts the question of who she will be going forward. And I thought, you know, again, it's just not something that you expect for a movie to deal with that's kind of aimed at kids. But in many ways, you know, Harry Potter is a whole series, and J.K. Rowling has said this, about death. Mm-hmm. And learning to deal with the ramifications of the fact that we die. And what we believe about death and all of that kind of stuff. And so this was, you know, I thought it was kind of a heavy subject for the movie to deal with. But I thought it was also interesting that they actually try to say something about that. And that the way in which, you know, this mother's death impacts each of the different characters in the movie. And specifically, you know, our main character, Clara, she's having a very difficult time finding a way through. You know, she's been hiding herself in her in the attic, spending a lot of time just kind of sheltered away from the rest of the world, not really kind of wanting to deal with that. And that seclusion in many ways is kept her away from really having to interact with even family members, you know, mm-hmm. Because she just isn't, she isn't wanting to kind of deal with, I guess, the ramifications of the death of her mother. And in a lot of ways, I thought it was fascinating because the traveling to the world of the Nutcracker and these realms is a reflection, and it becomes just a reflection of what's going on inside of her. And so when we go to that world, it's what's really happening. If you're looking at the thematic elements of the movie, it's just a reflection of the battle that's raging on inside of Clara, and we actually get to just see it. And so the fantasy part of the movie is actually a representation of what's happening in her. And I thought that was really, really a neat way to do that. Again, there's so much depth to this movie that I just don't feel like I've kind of looked at some of the reviews afterwards, and I don't feel like anybody's really picking up what this movie's actually trying to do and asking if that works at all. They're just on the surface of like, you know, oh, it's, you know, beautiful or whatever, or they just feel like it doesn't have anything to do with anything, and it's just like, wow, I feel like this movie is doing a lot of things, and people are just kind of missing the forest and the trees.
And they're not connecting the dots to what the deeper meanings are behind everything.
Right.
Yeah, I like that you're saying that each realm is like a reflection of what her psyche is going through. I definitely feel like the whole thing with her hiding away in the attic and playing with toys was just avoiding dealing with it ever. That she was just going to act like her mom wasn't gone. And she didn't have to leave this safe space anymore. And her father is the only one who's like, no, you're going to come out and deal with it and, you know, live life, because like it or not, things are still going on out here. And, you know, you kind of identify with Clara at the beginning of that feeling that, no, that's not fair. What if I don't want to deal with it? Why are you making me do this?
Right.
You know, of what it's like to be a kid, basically, you know, she doesn't understand. And I really like that the story, both as the ballet and the movie, is of Clara growing up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's no longer being this whiny child. It's learning how to deal with things as an adult would, and seeing things from her father's point of view.
Yeah, no, I absolutely agree, because, you know, one of the things that we see reflected is her father even chides her before she kind of ends up in this other realm, which is, you know, why are you being so selfish about this, you know? And in many ways, and part of the thing that I thought was so interesting about the movie is, again, dealing with the mother's death and this reflection then within Clara is that, you know, the younger you are, the harder it is to deal with this kind of subject. And she's right on the verge of being a young woman here. You know, she's in her early teens, it seems. Mm-hmm. So she's probably 13, 14, something like that. And you really get the sense of that, you know, that is the time period and the time when parents are trying to get their children to be less selfish and think more about others. And, you know, this world is not just about you. You know, it's not all about you. And that's pretty much what he's saying to her. And she still can't see that. And so when she goes to the land of the Nutcracker and all of these different realms, the reflection that we get is the two parts of her. You have the part of her that's like Sugar Plum, who's selfish and just wants to hide herself and wants to protect herself and wants to try and control everything to the point where she's in charge. Like, anything that she can be in charge of, she's going to try and control.
Mm-hmm.
And that she's going to try and barricade herself behind, like you were saying, you know, up in the attic, behind toys, behind all of these things, so she doesn't have to deal with what's happened. She thinks it's going to protect her. Whereas you have the other side, the other part of her, which is the Mother Ginger part of her, which is the person who wants to pick up the pieces and find a way forward. And what's so fascinating to me is you have, you know, the Sugar Plum fairy who you think is going to be the good character, and you realize she's the reflection of Clara, who's actually been hurting her family by not being there for them, by not putting her in their shoes. And so you actually see that reflection in the destruction of the land of amusements.
Mm-hmm.
And the kind of the way that her selfishness has laid waste to parts of the heart of her father specifically.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought it was so neat that we go into these realms and we get to actually see the ramifications of the choices that Clara has been making as a young girl and dealing with her mother's death. And we get to watch the battle rage in her, mm-hmm. literally on screen, to see what part of her is going to win. Is she going to become the person who will close herself off and protect herself behind walls of tin soldiers? Or is she going to be the person who wants to find a way forward for everyone, not just her?
Right.
And I thought that was really cool.
I agree. And I think you can even see the selfishness, too, in the fact that she even thinks when she's initially going into the realms that it's about her getting a Christmas gift. And then she finds it and it's all about her getting her key back. And she's like, look, I just want to get my key and go home. I don't care about any of you guys. So, yeah, I totally see that transformation, too, of her realizing what her mother meant, that everything you need is inside, is already inside you. And she keeps trying to figure out what that means and eventually gets there. But, you know, you do see that moment when she opens the egg and is still going, I finally got it open and there's nothing in here. You know, like all of this was for nothing. And you're going, oh, you're still not getting it, Clara.
That's a hard lesson to learn, you know, and a difficult way to learn this lesson, you know, having your parent die and having to realize in that it isn't all about you. It's mm-hmm. not just about you. And that's a hard thing for any of us to learn. And I think, you know, for most of our lives, we're probably relearning that lesson every once in a while, because it's our inclination to be selfish. It's our inclination to think about ourselves first and self-protect, mm-hmm. especially when bad things happen. And I really think that this movie does a great job for kids and even adults, you know, and especially for, I think, families to be able to talk through these kind of issues. And, you know, not necessarily just the fact of maybe if a parent dies, but the idea of what it means to be a person that thinks about others as much as you think about yourself, mm-hmm. and to put others first. And that's what Clara's journey is, going from somebody who is utterly selfish to properly selfless.
Mm-hmm.
And I really appreciate that about the film, because, you know, it's also reflective of, I think, the world in which we live today, where you see the destruction that selfishness causes. You know, as silly as it is, you know, this happening in these realms, the impact of people living their lives only for themselves is clearly seen in this movie, and I think they do a good job of showing the repercussions of that kind of behavior. Yes, it's in a fantasy land, right? But what it's reflecting is what Clara has actually been doing to her family,
right,
since the death of her mother. And I think that's the thing that makes it so powerful, because it's the illustration, you know, this is the parable of what's actually been happening, and that's what allows her to be able to learn this lesson in the end. And I think it's powerful. I thought that, you know, the more I've thought about it, the more I've liked what they did with this film, because they took something that could just be frivolous,
mm-hmm.
like you were talking about the ballet.
All fluff.
You know, yeah, it's fun, but it is kind of frivolous in the end. And this has taken that and turned it into something that I think is actually a really nice lesson for anyone. You know, I definitely, the more I've thought about it, the more I've started to take that idea to heart,
mm-hmm.
Because, you know, I've seen the way that selfishness and my thought process and not putting myself in other people's shoes mm-hmm. has impacted them. You know, I think anybody can look back on their lives and see a litany of damage that they've caused other people because you haven't thought of other people.
Yeah. And I even thought of something else that I took from it that, you know, I didn't actively think about before, but it's that whole thing about, you know, people aren't always what they seem, or you can't just believe what others tell you about a person, because, you know, it, we thought Sugar Plum would be the good guy, and that, you know, all of them talking about Mother Ginger being so awful was just the way things were, taking it with, you know, without any grain of salt. And you can't just believe what people tell you about someone and not investigate it at all, because it ended up being completely the opposite. And it was Mother Ginger and a mouse trying to tell her that how things actually were and to save everyone. I will add, I felt like the whole situation with the mice wasn't given enough justice, and that may sound silly, but in the ballet, I felt like, you know, it was about the Mouse King being there and having a lot more involvement, and then all his little minions, you know, trying to steal her away. And then in the movie, I felt like, you know, you see the wind-up mice twice for just a couple seconds, and then the Mouse King, that whole strange thing with him being able to compile all the mice into one giant mouse and grab her. It was a little weird. But yeah, he was just kind of there and not really as much part of the main story.
Well, and I think you are right. And I think you have a good point that I do wish that that had been more fleshed out, because, you know, the thing that they're playing on is your expectations that the mice and the Mouse King is going to be bad.
Mm-hmm.
And they flip that on its head and make them the good guys. And like you said, it is definitely a part of the film, and I think it's a really important part of the film, and I'm glad that you mentioned it. I didn't even think to put it on the outline, but yes, that whole idea of that, appearances are deceiving, you know. Mm-hmm. Do not judge a flower by its cover or a sweet by its taste, you know. Like, it just because something looks good, it doesn't necessarily mean it is, and that you have to judge everything with wisdom and discernment, and really test a person's claims to see if they're actually true, you know. And that's something I think too, you know, I was just reading a book, and the author was talking about this idea of, you know, that we have biases in our lives, and we spend a lot of our lives just confirming those biases with confirmation bias. Like, we just find information that kind of continues to feed what we think, instead of actually truly challenging our ideas to see if they still hold up.
Oh, yeah.
With the most challenging of ideas. And so I think that's something that I really appreciate about the film is, you know, she comes in and just immediately buys, Clara does, buys what the Sugar Plum Fairy tells her. Little does she know is that the Sugar Plum Fairy has been lying to everybody else in the realm too.
Right.
You know, and in many ways, again, this is a reflection of what Clara has been doing. She's been lying to herself by not dealing with truly what happened with her mother. And in turn, she's been hurting her family, you know. And so all of those things, I think, tie together so well, the thematic elements of what they're trying to do in the film. I was really impressed with that. And I think it's again, it's just, I didn't go in expecting to get any of that, you know.
Right.
I kind of expected to be a fun Disney romp. And what I got was something, I think, much more heartfelt, much more heartwarming, and much more touching. And I think, you know, somebody, I did read somewhere that they said this movie kind of lacks a sense of Christmas. But I think that, isn't that the whole meaning of Christmas in the first place? Is putting aside yourself for others?
Right. It's about giving rather than receiving.
Right. And so this movie, I think, absolutely confirms and it celebrates the best of what the Christmas spirit means.
Right. I mean, just because it wasn't full of Santa, more nutcrackers, you know, trees, all of the things that you would think, you know, Christmas trees that people traditionally think Christmas is about. It was more about the, like you said, the true meaning of it, and that it's about giving, it's about selflessness, and, you know, reflecting on who you want to be. I think that it didn't need to be a Christmas movie in the sense of, you know, like Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer. I think that it provides right. enough without having to go that route. And still, I think that if, you know, kids are too young to get all of the layers of this, they could still enjoy it.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, this movie, when we're talking about these kind of deep layers that it does have, I really do believe that it does something that's kind of special when it comes to this type of film, in the sense that it really is striving to tell a story that has more depth, that has more to it than just, oh, wasn't that fun that, you know, these things happened, and wasn't that exciting when we went to the land of like sugar plums and candy and stuff like that. Like, this is a movie that's really working hard at telling a story that means something more than just being pretty,
right?
You know, and I think the fact that the movie is willing to deal with the questions of who do I want to be as a person in light of what I've seen my parent be, and now I've lost them. Like, that is just a really deep and beautiful question to be talking about. And so, like, we talked a little bit before, but some of the cast, For me, I love Mackenzie Foy because she was in Interstellar, and she's his daughter in that movie.
Mm.
And she's fantastic in that movie. Like, I think she's really great. I thought she was pretty good here. I think that I do kind of agree with you a little bit. I feel like I wanted just a little bit more. I feel like I wish they would have given her just a little bit more. I feel like they could have given her some more like truly emotional scenes.
Yeah.
And that would have been great. But the moment at the end when she's with her father, it made me tear up a little bit. I'm not going to lie. When, you know, they finally come back together and like she's apologizing and he's trying to apologize to her, and she's really saying, no, it was my fault. You know,
yeah.
Like and like really owning up to her mistakes. And taking responsibility for what she's been doing to her family, and specifically her father, who she has seemed to have forgotten that her, like, as he said, and I have to say, Matthew McFadden as her father was fantastic too, but just that whole thing of him saying, I lost the love of my life.
Right.
You know, I don't get that back. And I felt like that's the scene where I was like, I feel like they could have done a couple more scenes, maybe specifically in the realms where she was kind of maybe having a breakdown or something,
mm-hmm.
where they could have given her even more to do that way. I think it would have been really good, but I still really appreciated her for the most part.
I did feel like she was a pretty good most of the time, but I felt like her as an actress in this movie was a little bit lacking in some of the scenes that were supposed to be emotional. I wasn't feeling as much emotion from her as I expected to be. Overall, I do think, you know, she did amazingly well for her age as well. I did especially love the scene at the end with her father when she's apologizing and finally gives him a dance, because, you know, especially remembering being a young girl myself, you know,
mm-hmm.
I remember when I was a Girl Scout and my dad went with me to the daddy daughter dance, and that it was just a really like nice moment to have dancing with your dad. So it's really sweet, especially in light of him losing his wife and her losing her mom, to then have that moment again as the time when they're reconciling. Mm-hmm. So that, yeah, that meant a lot to me. I did like that they didn't make her relationship with the Nutcracker as much of a like romantic feeling thing.
Mm, right. Yeah.
Because you still want to feel like she's
more like
a young girl.
Almost like a brother.
Yeah. Not like they're dating.
Yeah. No, I agree with you. I'm definitely glad of that too. I think, and I thought, and I might butcher his name, so forgive me. Jaden Foyer Knight, who played Captain Philip Hoffman, the Nutcracker. I thought he was very funny.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he had very good timing, and I really enjoyed that he played the role as somebody who doesn't completely, truly understand the emotions of the scenes that he's in because he's a nutcracker.
Exactly. You know, he's supposed to be a little stiff.
And so, yeah, yeah, exactly. And I thought he did it well, but there were some moments, especially like towards the end, where I thought he had some nice, fun, emotional resonance. And yeah, he was a really fun character. And again, I think you're right on to call out that it's good that they don't go the romantic route, because that's not what this story is about. You know, this is a story about a young girl coming to deal with the loss of her mother. This isn't about her needing to fall in love with anyone.
Right. And that she's probably still a little too young.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, you can kind of go there if you want. But I don't think this movie needs that. I think this is this really is a story about somebody overcoming the loss of a parent. And it would feel kind of forced, I think, to shove in a romance.
Yeah.
And so I agree with you. You know, if they ever wanted to make another one,
then maybe they could move on from there.
And she's a little bit older.
Yeah. But I did want to say I also teared up a little bit when he was telling Clara goodbye.
Mm.
Because the look on his face is like his best friend has to leave. And he's kind of tearing up, and I'm going, I know, I don't want to say goodbye either.
Yeah. No, I agree with you. There was a really nice moment between them where, you know, it is almost like he has this realization of, oh no, she's going, and I may never see her again.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I feel like we're coming to the same thing, is that the end of the movie had the best moments emotionally.
Yes.
And they really did a good job, I think, for the most part, of kind of bringing home some of those moments we were hoping that there would be just a little bit more of throughout the rest of the movie.
Mm-hmm.
I have to say, though, I'm pretty sure that Keira Knightley had a blast in this role, because she seemed to be relishing playing the evil, wicked witch of the, you know, evil, wicked fairy of the West.
Yeah.
Like, she was fantastic.
I don't know how they did her voice, but I feel like if she was intentionally speaking in that high a pitch all the time, she was really milking it and enjoying it. And I probably would have been,
I think,
too.
She was trying to be as almost, like, she wanted it to be as sticky, sweet, and obnoxious as possible, and she does a great job of it.
Yeah.
Like, a really great job of it.
And her hair really does look like cotton candy. I have to applaud the costuming.
That was one of my favorite laughs. And the whole thing was when they're watching the ballet and it starts to get to the scary part, the quote-unquote scary part, and she starts to eat her own hair.
Yeah.
That's funny.
Yeah, that was hilarious. But it definitely was unexpected to have her turn and be the villain. And I really felt like in that moment where Clara confronts her about, you know, what are you doing? Why are you being like this? You see that although what she's doing is bad, that Sugar Plum is doing it because she also misses Marie.
Mm-hmm.
And that they're also all dealing with her death, just dealing with it in the wrong way.
And I think Keira Knightley's character as the Sugar Plum Fairy does a great job of showing the turmoil that this kind of thing causes and what's going on in Clara's character, which is this self-protective desire. Like, I don't ever want to be hurt like this again. Mm-hmm. Somebody left me. Somebody abandoned me. And that's such a, you know, if somebody you love dies, they didn't do it on purpose, you know? I guess unless, yeah. They'd almost never have done it on purpose. Let's put it that way. And so something has caused that to happen, and it's most likely been out of their control, but you still can have those feelings of abandonment. And I thought the way that they kind of brought that out in the Keira Knightley character there gave you that wonderful picture of what's going on with Clara and why she's been the way she's been. But it also shows, like you said, the self-destructive nature of that and how much that hurts everyone around them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, is when you lash out like that, instead of kind of deal with what's actually happening, you try to not deal with it, and it causes anger and resentment and bitterness and self-protection and all of those kind of things. And yeah, Keira Knightley's performance. I think she just relishes getting to do that kind of character. She doesn't get to play the bad person very often, mm-hmm. but I thought she did a great job.
Or to be so over the top, almost like from Hunger Games or something. The lady that said, I think it was Elizabeth Banks played, "May the odds be ever in your favor."
Yes.
She reminded me of
Effie,
that.
Yeah.
Yep.
Now, you're absolutely right. It is that type of character. And of course, she ends up turning evil. So, that was really nice. But yeah, I think to me, I've seen Matthew McFadden be in a couple of films. One of my favorites is the Keira Knightley version of Pride and Prejudice,
mm-hmm.
Where he plays Mr. Knightley. And he played the father in the film so well. Like the few scenes that he's in, he does everything you need to do so you feel the pain that he's going through as a father. Trying to, especially when you think about the time period this movie takes place, like maybe late 18th century to early 19th century. Mm-hmm. Like, so this is kind of a non-emotional time for men, right? So he's trying to hold his family together with the loss of a woman he obviously loved dearly. And that is not an easy thing. And I felt like he did a fantastic job of portraying that in the very little screen time that he has.
I absolutely agree with you. And I have to say, I had only ever seen him in Pride and Prejudice other than this movie. And I have that movie on Blu-ray. And my husband will tell you I watch it way too much.
It's my favorite version of that story.
Mine
so
too.
I'm with you.
But I wanted to say, though, his performance in that movie and this movie, I felt the similarity in that he knows how to work the muscles in his face so well for what the scene is calling for emotionally. I feel like with him in particular as an actor, anytime I can see what his eyebrows are doing and know what he's feeling. And it's so weird to say that about an actor, but I feel like he's so good at that. He's also good looking, but that's not all of it. And I feel like he did that as the father in this movie. Just with his eyes, he conveyed to her the loss and the extreme sadness that he was feeling. And then, you know, finally in the end, they talk about it. But before, it was more of just like him seeing his other daughter in his wife's dress. And he didn't say anything. It was just the way he looked at her was, I forgot about that dress. So, yeah, he was brilliant.
He is very good at emotion in any scene, but he's specifically good at portraying heartbreak that's happening internally. And like you said, it just kind of shows up on his face in the exact way that you would want in the scene. And so, yeah, I 100% agree with you. I think he does such a fantastic job in the film in this. And so I really appreciated that they got him in the role. In fact, my wife leans over to me and is like, "I didn't know he was in this movie."
I didn't.
And I was like, "I didn't either." I thought that was great. I will say that, you know, if you cast Helen Mirren in a role in a film, I kind of expect her to have more to do, and she really didn't have very much to do in this movie. And I was a little bit disappointed that Lady Mother Ginger just didn't have more to that role, because again, it's Helen Mirren and she's an Oscar winning actress. She is amazing. And I mean, it's not like it was bad or anything. It's just, she didn't have a ton to do in the film, which kind of shocked me.
Yeah. It was interesting too, the way that they went with her character being the woman in the giant dress with the clowns. Because I did always remember that from the ballet and thought it was such a funny thing. And then they now made it so creepy.
So creepy.
Yeah. The clowns especially, and how their bodies could come apart. I could see that giving a kid nightmares. But what little Helen Mirren had in this movie, I do felt like obviously she did a great job. She was good at it when they wanted you to think she was a villain, at coming across creepy and mistrusting. And then realizing who she was talking to, you suddenly kind of see her soften. And then later you get it, obviously, when they turn it around and let you know she's not the villain. But I did want to say, too, I like the makeup that they did on her face to come across like a broken toy.
Yes. It looked like a China doll that had been glued back together that still had pieces missing.
Yeah. And it always really was cool. That perfect. And I just thought that was a really nice touch.
Yeah. No, that was really great. No, I think that's a good time to kind of talk about the production of the movie, because I do think that's a big part of this film. And one of the things that I really did enjoy was just, I feel like, I wouldn't say for the most part, the CGI is pretty good in the movie. Mm-hmm. But I think the places where the movie really production-wise excelled was in the places that it felt like a set that you're on. So like when they were in the fourth realm in the forest, you know, and it's a big set, right? You know, it's like Fangorn Forest and the Lord of the Rings movies. It is just a massive set that they've created. Mm-hmm. But it feels real, and I felt like it had this really tactile nature to it, which was great. And then the rest of the production design of just kind of creating this really magnificent otherworldliness to everything. But then you had some nice little touches, like the fact that the castle looks like, you know, something you would see in Moscow in Russia, yep. Which, you know, references the fact that this is Tchaikovsky's Nutcracker music and everything. So I thought that the production value of the movie and just the design work for the costumes and everything that they did in that way really popped off a screen, and it felt like one of those kind of big grand Disney movie adventures that you would get from, you know, back in the day.
Yes, it had so much that made it so grand and beautiful and colorful. I think that was a big point that added to it, was that everything was very bright in the four realms. Mm-hmm. And then by contrast, you know, in the three of them. And then by contrast, the land of amusements being all dark and like everything is dead was a really good visual element to it. I loved what they did with the costumes. I wished that I was one of the women in these beautiful, you know, old dresses dancing around a ballroom. And I will add too how you said some of the scenes felt like a set because they wanted you to, especially right. During the scenes where they had ballet in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember the pieces that folded like a pop-up book?
Yes. Oh, that was amazing.
I love
that
when they do that.
Amazing when that the ballerina first comes out and they keep pulling up the different parts of the castle. Oh, I loved that.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, I recently saw that in another movie. I finally watched Anna Karenina, and they kind of film it the same way.
Yep.
Speaking of Keira Knightley.
Yes. Yeah, no, Joe Wright does that specifically to create that feeling of life being a stage, you mm-hmm. know. And so he puts all the characters in Karenina specifically on a stage, and you get that very theater feel to a big screen movie. So yeah, absolutely.
I loved all of the production and how it all came together on this movie especially, and I think you couldn't have really have done it justice without that. Because the ballet, I mean, I you know, the more I read up on it in our research for this, it was the most popular ballet arguably of all time.
Yes.
I mean, it's the most known, the music even people could hear and suddenly realize, oh, yeah, that's the Nutcracker. I mean, you hear it in commercials. It's everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I think you needed all of that to put together and make this a great movie and do the ballet justice.
You know, it's funny because we didn't even really mention that, you know, you've got Morgan Freeman in the film.
Oh, yeah.
And the fact that he plays Dulcimer. And her grandfather. And, you know, I just kind of, I thought he was great in the movie as well. But I just loved even the production value of the world of his, like when you're in his workshop
mm-hmm.
and all of that, I thought was really fantastic. And kind of even the thought process and production value that goes all the way to the fact that there's an owl that follows her around. And in many cultures, owls represent the spirits of the dead. And so I thought it was very interesting that that owl follows her around for the entire movie. And then once her father and her start dancing, it flies away.
Oh, I never got
that.
So
it's almost as like, yeah. So it's like they did a lot of little things in this movie, I thought, that were really just very smart. And again, it's just these little pieces I think a lot of people, I feel like the little bit that I've read of some of the reviews and stuff, I just feel like people have missed. And to me, this feels like a movie that is meant to be shared with families to talk about and to watch and to be able to digest together and have important conversations about, because this movie isn't just a fun romp. It really is saying something about some of the most important things about life, about who we're going to be and what we're going to do if, you know, we happen to lose somebody. And what I love is in the end, it really is about a little girl learning that after the loss of her mother, does she want to represent the best of what her mother left her? Or does she want to tarnish that memory by being somebody who pulls away from everybody else and pulls away that gift from everybody and ends up hurting them in the end? And so I just didn't expect that from this movie when I went into it, which is great.
Yeah, you know, I felt exactly the same way. I did not think it was going to hit me in the feels, as they say.
So if you were to give this movie a rating, how many feels would you give it, do you think?
That's a good rating system to go by. I talked about this because I went to see it with my aunt, ironically, the first person I ever saw the ballet with. And we talked about it after, and I will say my opinion has gone up since you and I have talked through it and some things that I missed. So I would give it a 7 out of 10 feels.
Oh, that's good.
Because I do feel like it had this depth that made it such a better story. I feel like it, you know, something we didn't even mention as much was the music, you know, that they used some of the original Tchaikovsky stuff. Yep. But then there was actually a song written for this movie by Bocelli and his son. Mm-hmm. A song called Fall on Me, which if you just listen to that, it's just beautiful. So I encourage people to listen to it. And it really had all of the design work that I would expect for such a grand adventure kind of ballet to then be made into a film. I mean, there really wasn't much lacking for me other than what I said about, you know, I felt like Clara, her character didn't get as much development as I would have liked. And then the girl as an actress, I felt like could have been a little bit better.
I'm right there with you. You know, I would say it was 3.5 out of 5 feels, which I think becomes a 7 out of 10. I really do. I liked this movie a lot. And the more I have thought about it, the more I have enjoyed it. And I think that's something that it's just kind of really special to find a movie that is safe for the whole family, but really has a lot to say to the whole family. And I highly encourage, you know, if you are a parent and you're listening to this, I think this is a movie that you really can go and enjoy with your kids, but then have some great things to talk about with your kids. And I think it has the kind of lessons that you would want from kind of a fairy tale story, you know, the good moral lessons that you would want to be sharing with your kids. And I think that's really something that we miss sometimes. And so I really appreciate that that was a part of the film. And like you said, too, I've got the soundtrack. I've been listening to it. James Newton Howard did a great job of working in all of these themes from Tchaikovsky. They have a wonderful piano soloist, Lang, who is an amazing pianist, doing some of the work there as well. And so I, you know, being a fan of the music of Tchaikovsky and the Nutcracker itself, I really appreciated what they did here. And so, yeah, I think this is a great, fun adventure film. You know, it's a great way to start off the holiday season for families. Mm-hmm. I do kind of think it's interesting that this movie comes out now, because I think if it came out closer to Christmas, it might be even better for the film. But I highly encourage you, you know, if you wanted to get your family into the holiday spirit already, this is the great way to do it. So I think you should go see The Nutcracker and the Four Realms. So, which leads me to say, I'm really glad we got a chance to talk about it, because I really enjoyed the movie, and I didn't know what to expect, you know. And sadly, this movie has not gotten great reviews, and I don't know why. I don't think this movie deserves the bad reviews that it's getting. I think that it's actually, as we talked about, I think it's really well done. There's a few things that, you know, I would have done a little bit differently, but on a whole, I really enjoyed watching it, and I'm glad that I saw it, and it's definitely one that I think I will probably visit, you know, in subsequent Christmases. You know, this would be it's a movie that I would enjoy rewatching at this time of the year and adding to my Christmas watch list. So glad we got a chance to talk about it. Really appreciate the associate producers here we have through Patreon: Ken Tripp, Davis Grayson, Ryan Millett, and Daniel Noah. These guys have been supporting the show for a long time. And this is a huge network. There's nothing and there's no way we could possibly do this without their support through Patreon. So go over to patreon.com/trekfm and see how you can become part of our team today. There are some great perks and some great contribution levels that come with those. So check that out. But honestly, every little bit helps. So help all of the shows from Trek FM keep coming to you each and every week by going to patreon.com/trekfm and seeing how you can help us out, making sure that all of this content doesn't leave the airwaves. But Christy, I'm really excited that we got a chance to do this. You're going to be back later on this month to talk about some other things with us here as we wrap up the last Bond movie until, I guess, Daniel Craig's next Bond movie comes out, which is kind of sad. But where can everybody find you if they want to check out what you are doing all over the interwebs?
Thank you. Sure. You can find me, of course, here on 602 Club regularly talking about now moving on from Bond, but going to be doing some other things like Iron Fist Season 2. And also I am co-host on Galactic Fashion with my friend Teresa Delgado, talking about all kinds of geek fashion for women, men, kids, everybody. And then I do occasionally write as well. And you can find me on Instagram and Twitter at BestBenBell.
And make sure that you do check out Christy at all of those places. And yes, I am very excited to say that honestly, Christy's going to be a featured guest here basically on the 602 Club this month. So the cot is ready for you. I hope it's comfy. We'll have your drinks for free this month. But you can also find me on Twitter at MattRushing02. I'm on Instagram under the same name. If you enjoy movies, find me over on Letterboxd. I'm MRushing02 over there. You can follow all of what I'm watching and reviews and that kind of stuff. I'm also here on the network doing another show with my good friend Chris as we talk about Deep Space Nine on the Orb. I'm over on the Nerd Party Network doing two shows. One is called Owl Post, and that is where Drea Kaufman and I talk about Harry Potter. We are going through every single book in the series, one chapter at a time. In fact, by the time this episode drops, we will have just dropped the episode that finishes The Goblet of Fire. So we only have 3 books left. I'm also doing Aggressive Negotiations with John Mills, which we just have a delightful time talking about something Star Wars each and every week. So I hope you'll check out both of those shows. And then last but not least, I also do a show with my friend Courtney as we talk about films through the lens of faith, and that show is called Cinema Stories. And you can find any of those shows, mine or Christie's, wherever you get your podcasts, so please listen and subscribe. But thank you so much for joining us, and y'all come back now here.